12 the last few months together when I've been here. And now we come to the end of that chapter. We have a very interesting incident in the life of Jesus involving his family. And this is somewhat understandable when we read the story. And yet at the same time, Jesus' response or reaction to the whole thing surprises us and might even insult us a little bit at times. Jesus, of course, has been teaching an awful lot of things in this chapter, very profound ideas, very profound thoughts. And he's in the midst of teaching. We read what happens next. And so I begin with verses, verse 36. While Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, "Your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you." He replied to them, or to him, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" Pointing to his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother." This surprises us because we have a tradition that seems to elevate the mother of Jesus to a special status, some people calling her Mother of God, because Jesus himself is God, and therefore he was the mother, therefore Mother of God, which kind of leaves a different impression in our minds because we're thinking maybe it means Mother of the Father, which doesn't make sense at all. But the sense of this elevation makes it high. So high, for some people anyway, they have statues to Mary, and sometimes they envision seeing images of Mary showing up from time to time. That's kind of a special thing. Somehow this relationship of the mother of Jesus is so etched in our minds as being such an important person, we sometimes have a hard time understanding how Jesus can say what he says here. On another occasion, Jesus is talking, this is in Luke, and as he's talking, some woman in the crowd says, "Blessed is the woman who put you to her breast so you could suck her breast," is that kind of, you know, that nursed you. And Jesus would say, "Greater is the person who," Jesus kind of distinguishes that altogether, "is the one who puts the trust in God," and kind of diminishes, kind of like, what's the matter with you, Jesus? How could you say that about your mother? How dare you say that about your mother? We've elevated the sense of motherhood to a high position that we kind of have a hard time imagining how Jesus can dismiss that. We like to watch the television show, The Chosen. And in that one, you see Jesus has a special relationship with his mom, called her Emma. And when you see it, it's kind of a special, and we think, oh, how sweet, how nice that is. That must have been we really have no idea. But we imagine there's some kind of special connection between the two. And I think it's Luke, it says that when Jesus was born, Mary kept in her mind the things the angel had said to her about Jesus and remembered these things. So she had some kind of an idea. You know, we like to sing the song around Christmas time, "Mary, did you know, what kind of person this baby would become when he would do these wonderful things?" Well, she wouldn't know the exact things, but she had a better idea than most people did because she talked to the angel, and the angel had told her this was a special baby. This is unusual. This is something that was special about this baby. Kind of reminds you of the story of Moses. I think it's the Hebrews that mentioned the fact that his mother and father recognized that this baby was somehow special. Moses was their third child, by the way. They had a daughter and they had a son, and this is the third child. And, of course, the rule was you had to kill this baby, and so instead of killing him, they put him into a little box and let him float down the river and so forth. Of course, you had the story about Moses being pulled out of the water and given the Egyptian name Moses, which means being drawn from the water. It's not a Hebrew name. That kind of surprises us how all this takes place. And yet you had the story how God... But they recognized that he was a special baby when he was a small baby. So it's kind of an amazing thing for us to understand what's going on here. So this connection between mother and child, it seems to be a special connection for all of us. So we read this and we say, well, how dare you, Jesus, say that about your mother and about, we can understand to some degree about your brothers, but how dare you say that about your mother? Sometimes because we understand sibling rivalry, we understand how sometimes the feeling between brothers and sisters is not always that great, not always that wonderful. Sometimes children kind of resent one another. I've known people, it's silly, but I've known people who resented their siblings even into their 70s and 80s. They would say of the person, "I was doing pretty well until you came along and you messed up my life because I got all the attention and then you came along and You took that away from me. You had this sense of resentment that still they still hang on to all of their lives. Kind of strange how that is. That's crazy how we have this family connection that's kind of how we break it up. And yet Jesus makes a statement here that kind of surprises us. What's going on? Well, how dare you think that, Jesus? And that's not the first time Jesus has said something like that. Earlier in Matthew chapter 10, let me get the exact wording here because I don't want to make sure I say it wrong here. Let's see, Matthew chapter, come on, fingers, 10. There it is here. Here it is. Do not suppose I've come to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but the sword. For I've come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Some of us say, well, that's kind of normal. A man's enemies will be members of his own household. Jesus is saying, I come to bring a sense of war within family. Kind of like, what's the matter with you, Jesus? How can you say that? What are you talking about? And he's talking about the fact that sometimes we get so connected to family ties, we have a hard time distinguishing anything that would interrupt that. We have a hard time understanding how anyone can be like that. So we wonder, what's going on, Jesus? How can you say this? What's your attitude? The hard thing for us to remember about is that Jesus comes from God. Hebrews would say he's the exact representation of God on the earth. So when Jesus says something, he's revealing to us the heart of God. One of the apostles said to Jesus toward the end of his life, show us the Father. And Jesus says, have you seen me? To see me is to know the Father. That's Jesus, I'm revealing the Father to you all the time. So when you listen to Jesus, you're getting a sense of what God thinks, because that's what Jesus is telling you. He's telling you how God thinks about things. And the way God thinks is different than what we normally think, because we think God must be like us because we're made in the image of God. Of course, that's where we're wrong. God is not always like us. The whole point of this life is that we become more like God because God is not like us. My ways are not your ways. My thoughts are not your thoughts, Isaiah 55 says. So we have a hard time believing that. So as Jesus is talking to these people, dealing with them, we have this interference by his family. Now, there's a little more information given to us, I think, in Mark. Let me see if I can remember the phrase. It's Mark chapter 3 is what it was, where it says, Jesus entered a house, and again a crowd gathered, so he and his disciples were not even able to eat. When his family heard about this, they came to take charge of him, for they said, he is out of his mind. I've known people who I think were out of their mind, and I believe that all of us kind of get out of our mind from time to time, because we're human. That's just the nature of things. And eventually we come, as a prodigal son story, we come to our senses, that we begin to figure things out, we come back to our minds. But to say that about Jesus is particularly insulting, and yet this is something his family felt about him. It's hard for us to understand the family dynamics in the life of Jesus. Most of us believe Jesus was the firstborn of a number of children. He would have at least three brothers, I know, of James, Judas, and Simon. There might have been a fourth, I can't recall. And then there are sisters, plural. So it's at least two sisters, if not more. We don't know quite how many there are of him. We don't quite know what the family thought of Jesus. We know in John 7 that it says his brothers did not believe on him. And so we have this kind of tension that exists between Jesus and his brothers. And we're a little bit surprised in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 about the resurrection story where Jesus makes an appearance to certain persons after his death. And one of the people he appears to is James, his brother. James would become a very important leader in the early church. He'd become a very important leader in the early church, so much so that he becomes kind of a standard of authority for all of them. He would write one of the books of the Bible, the book of James. Another brother would write a book of the Bible, Jude. So we recognize that at least two brothers would come to believe on Jesus later on, but they didn't believe on him during his life. Why not? Well, the problem with Jesus was that he looked kind of like a normal person. He kind of acted like a normal person, except what he talked about. He had a different way of thinking, you know. You had this story when he's 12 years old, and he stays behind when they visit in Jerusalem at a feast, and they're going home. There's a whole crowd, and Mary and Joseph, they've got all these children, they've got all everyone else, and they don't notice Jesus is not with them. And a few days ago, they think, where is Jesus? And then they got a trek back to Jerusalem, and they're looking, and they finally find him at the temple, having a discussion with the scribes and the leaders, the rabbis and so forth, and they're saying to him, what's going on, you? What are you doing? They said to a warrior center. And Jesus gives us a remarkable answer. Didn't you know I'd be about my Father's business? Do you know who your Father is, Jesus? Do you recognize who your Father is? Are you talking about something other than Joseph? Well, we know the story that Joseph is not his biological father, but he's sort of a surrogate father. He's there. But he's not talking about Joseph. I'm about my Father. I'm in the house of God. I'm doing my Father's business. Jesus seems to understand at the age of 12, there's something unusual about himself. He knows he's on a special mission from God. And he's begun to think about that by the age of 12. Can you imagine what it must have been like to be 14 and 15 and 18? You're growing up with this in your mind. As he grows older and older, he begins to rely heavily and more heavily upon God and the answer to God. And of course, we don't know quite how soon everything begins to come together with him, but he seems to have a pretty good understanding by the time he starts his ministry as to what God thinks, because he reveals God's thinking all the way along the line. So he's thinking quite beyond what the rest of his family is thinking. The rest of his family is watching this. And it's hard to really understand what they think about him. Being the oldest, he should be taking over his father's business. His father is a carpenter. And yet Jesus leaves the family business to his brothers to go on and do this rabbi thing, this sort of mission thing. And they're thinking, well, that's kind of strange. What's the matter with him? And then he starts making these statements, these things that goes against what we understand normal people would think about. This business about, you know, I didn't come to being a priest. I came to bring a sword. What are you talking about? He's talking about those who are last will be first and first will be last. He who exalts himself will be humbled. He who humbles himself will be exalted. Over and over again, he says just the opposite of what we would think is right. Are you crazy? What's the matter with you? It's easy to see why they would begin to think, he's lost his mind. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And as many times with family, they begin to think, we know better than you what you need to do. Have you ever gotten that from your family? You probably know how you feel when you felt that way. Imagine how they must have felt, how Jesus must have felt. We know better than you do. So Jesus, you need to come out and talk to us because you're kind of losing it. You need to understand that you're not making sense here. You need to understand that you're kind of stepping across the line. Like, you know, Caesar had stepped across the Rubicon. You've stepped across the line here, and if you don't step in, you don't step back, we're in big trouble because you're declaring war where you shouldn't be declaring war. Jesus, you're crazy. Stop doing this. You've lost your mind. It's insulting to imagine they would think that about Jesus. Yet it's very family for them to do that. That's very much what a family would do. You're not doing what the family should be doing. You're not following the family values. You're kind of a rogue. You're kind of going off by yourself. What's the matter with you? We don't understand you, Jesus. We need to put you somewhere safe. And Jesus gives an answer here that completely violates them. He says, and who is my mother? And who is my brother? And who is my sister? Well, they're all looking at us. We know your mother. They're standing over there. They had this expectation that you should stop what you're doing and come and drop everything and go and talk to them because they're important. They're family. What's the matter with you, Jesus? How dare you sit here and ignore them? How dare you suggest, well, they're not important to me. You are more important to me than they are. Well, that confirms you're really out of your mind, Jesus. No, Jesus, no, I've got something else in mind. There's something deeper going on here. And that's, of course, the problem with Jesus. He often was thinking more deeply than people could understand. Many times, the thing Jesus would say was so remarkable that people would remark, wow, did you hear what he said? You understand what he's talking about. He doesn't talk like other people. There's something amazing about him. There's something godlike about him. later on in his life, soldiers would be sent to arrest Jesus. And they don't arrest him. They come back and the Pharisees say, "Why didn't you arrest him?" And their answer is, "No one spoke like this man. There's something special about this guy. He doesn't deserve to be arrested. There's something amazing about him. We don't understand it, but he's way over our heads." Jesus was more than just a genius in their minds. He was amazing. He's revealing the heart of God. We have sometimes a hard time understanding the heart of God because it's different from ourselves. So we have this interference from the family. Now, there's a sense of self-importance in them when they think they have a right to say this about Jesus. We're his family. We know what's best. We know what's going on. Jesus has stopped doing what he's doing because we're his family. And yet Jesus denies family ties. "I have a greater family than them. My family is those who serve the will of God." And it's very hard to understand that. I alluded in the Bible class we studied earlier a couple passages where Jesus would say in parables to people who think they know him, think they should be close to him by saying, "I don't know you." Even though they've done things and said things you would think should be special attention. Some people would say, "We cast out demons for you. We did many miracles for you. We did things in your name, Jesus." And Jesus would say, "I don't know you." We have talked about the parable of the narrow door. Just try to enter the narrow door because many will try to enter and they won't be allowed in. Others will become from the east and the south and the north and the west. And they'll sit at the table with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, all the great men of our history. But you won't be there. Why not? Why can't they enter the door? What's going on here? "Because I don't know you," he will say. Well, how do you get to know him? That's the question. How do you know him? What's going on here? And they say, "Well, we ate and drank with you. You spoke with. Sure, we know who you are." "No, I don't know you. You're not listening to me. You're not understanding what I'm talking about." It's very important for us to try to understand the heart of God, to understand the nature of God. That's our purpose on earth, is to strive to become more like God so that we can enter the family of God. So Jesus says, "Who is my family?" Well, those who understand my will, understand my values. I alluded to the fact that in 1 John chapter 4, John makes it pretty clear this understanding of God comes down to an attitude we have toward other people. God is love. Those who know God love one another, and they're born of God. Those who do not love do not know God. Ooh, see, that stings. That hurts. Because to some extent, we all have to confess, there are some people I don't really love. I don't like that person. You know, we all have favorites. You know, we really connect to the story of Jacob in the Old Testament. He had 12 sons, and he had a couple that he really favored, and a bunch of them he tolerated. Because he had a wife he favored, and he had a wife he just tolerated. You know, he was fooled into, he thought he was marrying the one he loved, the one he was crazy about, and she wasn't it. And they wake up in the morning, "Well, who are you? You're not." And the whole thing, "Well, you got to work 7 more years for that one." And he does it. And you have this story, it's a ridiculous story, and she is churning out children after children after children, and the one he loves can't seem to have a baby for nothing. And you go through a long, you've got these two sisters, they got their competition, and so they play around with handmaids and all kinds of ways of doing things. And he's got children after children after children, and finally the one he loves has a child. And we kind of understand why Jacob favors this child. It's the child of his favorite wife. It's an important wife. And this child seems to have an understanding of values later on, not when he's young, but later on, that seems to be admirable. When he's young, he kind of pushes it envelope a little bit. "Well, I had a dream, and my dream, boy, I'm the big shot. Get out of here, you little runt. You're not there. Who do you think you are anyway? God, why should all of us bow down? Who do you think you, what's going on with you? And so they, you know, they have a hard time because he's a little brother. And then the first four sons do things that kind of mess their lives up. One son has a sexual relationship with a handmaid. Another one, a couple others, they try to go after guys that violated their sister, Dinah. You have another one. First four sons you got a problem with. So Jacob decides, I've had enough of these older boys. I'm going to designate my favorite son as the firstborn. How do I know that? Because he gives him a special coat. Now, the coat has been mistranslated as a coat with many colors. That's not really what the Hebrew says. The Hebrew is a coat with long sleeves. Now, these are shepherds. If you're a shepherd, you don't want sleeves because you got to be able to do things. But if you got sleeves, that means you're not out working with the sheep. You're the manager. He's making Joseph manager over the whole family business. And the older brothers don't appreciate that. They resent it, and they hate him. You know, family hatred between brothers, not surprising, is it? They hate him so much that actually several of them want to kill him. That's their intention. Finally, one of them says, no, let's not do that. Let's do something else. And they finally sell him away. The concept of selling someone is so offensive to us as Americans, because we have history about selling people. We don't do that anymore. We finally threw that shackle off. But that was part of our history at one time, where you buy and sell people. What a terrible, terrible thing to think about that. And he sold off. As far as they know, he's dead. They think he's dead. They don't know what's going on. We know the story later on. He gets bought by someone who, you know, and he becomes an important servant and finally gets framed. He gets put in jail and finally gets elevated. He's serving. He's such a big shot down in Egypt. He's the second in command to Pharaoh himself. Big shot. Famine comes. Brothers come. They come for food. Who do they meet? Ironically, younger brother. They don't know it's him because he's shaved. They're all full of beards. You know, sometimes shaving does change your appearance. So, and besides, he's grown up. They don't remember. You know, when a guy gets, it's something about, you know, I've worked with kids for years at camp. Young girls don't change that much when they grow up to be older. They're a bigger version of young boys when they grow up. It's amazing. You don't recognize them. Their body changes so much. Because, well, you're a little Jimmy. Wow, you don't look like you. It's amazing how they grow. And so I can see they threw him away. He changed. He's a grown man. And so they don't recognize him. He's different. And so he's in a different role. He's in this role of authority. So we got this back and forth playing with, you know, well, do I give you a dot? Don't give you. I'm going to give you. So, you know, you finally, you know, you got to bring back your other brother, the other brother that your father loves. Oh, and finally, he reveals himself to his brothers. Shock. Oh, no, you're the one we thought had died. No, I forgive you. This concept of forgiveness is hard for us to understand. They don't believe it. How do I know that? Because when dad dies, they expect, here it comes. Here comes revenge. He's going to get us now. Yeah. And he said, no, I meant it, but I forgave you. It's hard. It's hard for us to understand that kind of profound forgiveness, but it's there. But we understand family squabbles. We understand what family does. We understand favoritism. We saw it in Jacob's story. So we wonder, was there favoritism in Jesus' family? Well, don't quite know. We imagine Mama might have favored Jesus. She knew something about him as a special boy. But didn't she also love her other sons? Well, I'm sure they did. And yet some of them kind of looked at, and they loved Jesus also as a brother, but they're kind of thinking, yeah, Jesus, you kind of lost your mind. You're crazy. You're not making any sense here. Jesus says, well, you guys don't understand my values. I'm thinking bigger, broader than all of you. My family is so connected to God that those who serve God are my family. They're connected to me. That's what I'm interested in. That's what I'm really all about. That's what's important to me. Very hard for us to understand that. What does it mean for us? It means if you become a follower of Christ, a believer in Jesus, you're in the family of God. And it violates our sense of right and wrong. Paul would explain it later by talking about this concept of credited righteousness. Hard to understand. But basically it comes down to this. It doesn't matter how unrighteous you've been. If you believe on Jesus, God says you're righteous. Even though in your mind and in your heart you say, I don't deserve, kind of like the prodigal son, I don't deserve to be your son. And yet the father will say to you, bring the robe, bring the ring, bring the shoes. This is my son. But I deserve to be your son. You're my son because you believe. It violates our sin. How can an unrighteous person be righteous? He can't. But God says he is. Therefore he is. We have to trust that God knows what he's talking about, even though it violates our sense of right and wrong. Jesus is the same thing. Who is my family? Who is my kin, my spiritual kin? Those who believe, those who understand the heart of God, those who love are born of God. Those who don't love don't know God. You go back to 1 John 4. You got to grasp the value of God. What does it matter? So it means that basically if you're struggling to do everything you can to serve God, but you still stumble, you still fall. We're imperfect, and we're all imperfect. But because we believe, he counts us as his family. You are his brother. You are his sister. You are his nephews, his nieces. You are his family, and that matters. Now, we have a proverb in our language. Blood is thicker than water. I didn't know what that meant until I was reading something that a missionary in Italy wrote it about. And he's explaining it because he lived over there where it's part of their culture. Because they believe over there in that part of the world that blood does matter, especially when it comes to Jesus. Because in their understanding, in their theology, the mother of Jesus is special. So special, in fact, that if you pray to her instead of to Jesus, it means more to Jesus than if you prayed directly to Jesus. Because they think Jesus is still mad about being crucified. You weren't supposed to crucify me. Oh, that hurt me. How dare you hurt me? I'm not going to listen to you. But if you pray to his mother, oh, he's a mama's boy. He'll do what mama says. Mama says, but Jesus, look, they asked me. And so, okay, mama, okay, fine. And so they had this concept of the blood of Mary matters more to Jesus than the spiritual tie, that Jesus himself said, who is my mother? Everyone who believes is my mother. So we have a violation in concept, sometimes in religious concept, of what Jesus himself said. We have a hard time understanding. We tend to lean on our own understanding more than we trust the word of God. Jesus represents the word of God. Jesus is explaining how God sees things. You can be part of the family of God because you believe on Jesus and you trust what Jesus says, even though in your own heart and your own mind, I don't deserve it. I've been a stinker. I've been rotten. I have not served him. I have violated him. I have betrayed him. I have ignored him. I've done terrible things. That's my sins. But now I believe. And because I believe, God says of me, you are my son. Hard for us to understand. It violates our sense of right and wrong. How can the son who said to his father, I wish you were dead. And when the father says of the son, this son was dead, but now he's alive because he's come home. God says that of us, because each one of us is the prodigal son. Every one of us have done that. And yet he embraces us, he loves us, says, you are my child, you are my son, you have a right at the banqueting table, right alongside Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, all of those. You're there too. You have entered into the narrow door. You don't know God. God doesn't know you. Most important thing in life is to get to know God. Because it matters in our spiritual family. We are tied to God spiritually. What a wonderful thing that is. It's one of the greatest blessings of all time. And to be disconnected from God is one of the curses of all time. Later on, Jesus would talk about branches and a branch with vines and things like that. And Jesus would say, don't become unattached. Don't break apart. Stay attached, because you're attached to that source of life. If you become unattached, you're going to be destroyed. You're going to be burnt up. It's hard for us to understand what he's talking about. But it's hard for us to remember that always be attached to God, because he's the source of your life. That's what matters most. I got so caught up in what I was talking about, I forgot what our song's going to be, but love.
703, I love you with the love of the Lord.
The love of the Lord, yeah, I love you with the love. That's an interesting song. I love you with the, it said, I love you, okay, it's a nice thing to say. No, I love you with the love of the Lord. It's a kind of a deeper spiritual bond. I love you because you're spiritual. I love you because you're like, I see in you the glory of my King. I love you with the love of the Lord. If you are part of God's family, we can say that about one another. If you're not, then we hope and long that you can eventually come to understand the Lord and be a part of that, that our love will can extend to you as well. If you're not a part of God's family, then we beg you, please consider becoming part of his family. But if you are a part of God's family, God bless you. Let's stand and sing our song.